We begin the current daf Maseches Bamitzia daf Kof Aleph. Begin on the top line of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf, explaining the halacha of our Mishnah. The Mishnah spoke about two different related type of cases. One is where someone sells his olive trees for firewood to someone else, and then it grows a certain amount of olives. Depending on the quality, that's going to be depends who gets it. Then the Mishnah spoke about the case that we're discussing here, which is Shatav Narazesav. Somebody has an olive tree in his property, and then the river comes and just swallows it up and brings it downstream into someone else's field. Then it stays over there, and it's in that person's field that this guy's olive tree grows olives on it. So the owner of the olive tree says, hey, it's my olive tree that grew the olives. The guy whose field it ended up staying in says, hey, it's my field that grew the olives, because what do you think that gets the nourishment from? Says the Mishnah, Yachleku, so they split the profits of the olives. That's the halacha of the Mishnah. And that the Gemara explains, Amar Ula Amar Shlakish. Says, Laishan, we didn't learn the halacha of a Mishnah, Elisha Nekr Begusheyan, that when they got uprooted from the ground as the river swallowed up, that it got uprooted with the land that's around the root of the tree, where the tree could survive on its own, even without any other land, because it still has the nourishment of land with it as it got uprooted. So it's as if it's still an old tree. Now, the significance of that is that such a tree, when it produces fruits, is exempt from the halachas of Arla. As the Mishnah teaches in Masechtas Arla, that a tree that gets uprooted with the land around it, if it could survive like that, so it's exempt because this is an old tree. But if not, it's actually going to be chayiv because although it's an old tree, but it's like it's being planted now for the first time, and then it's going to be chayiv and arla. Now, Tosfos actually explains the significance of this concept that the Ula is qualifying the halacha of the Mishnah like this is only because of one of the cases we're going to qualify is if it's within the first 3 years. So then we have to say that because we're going to talk about who gets it in the first 3 years, must be that it had the gush, the land around it with it, because if it didn't have that, then no one would be able to use it, because within the first 3 years, it would be considered arla if it's a new tree. Actually, the Vilna Gaon, the Gaon of Grub, brings here on the slide that actually, according to the Rambam, it's for a different significance, because without the gush, actually all of it would go to the owner of the land, because the owner of the tree would have no rights in it. It's only because actually his land is together with it and helps provide besides the land that it went into. But either way, one of the qualifications that Ula explains this halacha of the Mishnah is if it got uprooted with the land around it. Moreover, Ula Achar Shalish. And it's also talking about after 3 years. In other words, even if it got uprooted with the land around it, we still did not learn the halacha that it gets divided between the owner of the tree and the owner of the land that it ended up in. Only after it's already post 3 years of when the river had swept his tree into the other person's land, where the land the tree that was originally planted, and the significance of that is that because if the owner of the land had planted a tree without the land around it, without the gush, after 3 years, it would have already been excluded from the problem of Arla. Where now at this point, the gush, the land of the owner of the olive tree, doesn't really help anything for the owner of the land if it's after 3 years. So it's regarding such a situation that we said, okay, then they're going to divide it. Because the significance then of the land of the Baal HaZeisim is not significant. It only helps for the first 3 years. But after 3 years, it doesn't really help. So then you have really the land of the owner. You have the owner of the land, his land. You have the owner of the tree, it's his tree. So together, they produce, that's when they split. But says Ulav, but within the first 3 years, essentially, what's permitting the fruits of these olives in those first 3 years? It's the land of the tree, which is old, that's an old tree. That, says Ula, hakol shabal hazeisim. Then in the first 3 years, actually the olives of that tree, in those first 3 years, goes all of it to the owner of the tree, to the olive tree. Because the Amale, because he tells to the owner of the land, look, i'at netat b'teich shalish, had you planted any tree in these first 3 years, mi'ava achlid, would you eat? You wouldn't be able to eat. Because it's arla, a tree in its first 3 years. The only way this has fruit that's permitted in the first 3 years is because it's my old olive tree. So my old olive tree, and it has land, which it has, that it could survive on its own, so there was like an old tree, that's where the first 3 years, it's all mine. When did the Mishnah say, says Ula, that they split it, is after 3 years, where then the land of the olive tree has no significance, because even if it wasn't your land, even if I took any tree, after 3 years, the owner of the land could say it would be permitted for me. That's when it's a half and half. Then it's, okay, it's my land and your tree, because I don't need your land anymore. That's when they split it. But again, before those, in the first 3 years, all of it would go to the owner of the olive tree. That's what Ullah says. And that asked the Gemara, but let the owner of the field tell the owner of the tree, wait a second. Iyana nati, had I planted my own tree, la'achar shalish havachin le'kule, after 3 years, I would have eaten the whole thing myself. In other words, if I would, let's say, go ahead and plant my own tree, I would spend very little money to get a new sapling. After 3 years, it would be a huge tree, and it would be producing fruits just like your olive tree. Now, since I didn't do this, rather I left your olive tree in my land, so it's obvious that I didn't leave it with the intention that you should be able to eat with me after 3 years. Only because I get to eat with you in the first 3 years. So since that's the same idea, so since you let me do it, so then the same thing I let you do after 3 years. But hashtaka achlet palgaba doi, now you want to go ahead and you want to split with me after 3 years? How can you tell me that I don't get to eat in the first 3 years? Because, oh, that's, if I were to do it myself, I wouldn't be able to eat anything the first 3 years. So then why should you be able to split with me after the 3 years? Had I planted my own, you wouldn't have gotten anything. So if we're splitting with you after 3 years, then I should be splitting with you in the first 3 years too. So that's a question of Ulis Halacha, who he said in the first 3 years, then it all goes to the Baal HaZeisim. So Ella rather says the Gemara, Ki Asa Ravin Amr Rish Lakish. When Ravin came, he said a different approach in the name of Rish Lakish. That similar but different. Lo Yishanu, we didn't learn this Halacha, the Mishnah of Yachloikut, that he split it, is Ella Shenekar Begushain, same idea that it got uprooted with the land around the tree, Ubetoich Shalish. And if it's within the first 3 years, that's when they divide it. But if it's after already 3 years, then actually all of it goes to the owner of the land. Why? Because the Amalei, he could tell to the owner of the tree, look, Iano Nati, had I planted any tree, after 3 years, wouldn't I be eating all of it myself? And if I don't have any need for you, what's your tree doing for me? The first 3 years, it's doing something for me because, yes, if I planted anything else, it would have been Arla. I would have been prohibited to have the benefit of the Paris. But therefore, that's when we split it and divide it. But after 3 years, I don't need your tree. It's not doing anything for me. I could have planted anything I would have bought for a few dollars. I would have had a huge tree after 3 years, and therefore it all goes to me. So the Allah v'chleik was only within the first 3 years. Not like Ula, who said it's only after the first 3 years. Now, that the Gemara asked the same question, seemingly, but in the reverse. Why? The lemalei, let the owner of the olive tree tell to the owner of the land, Iyat natat, had you planted, betech shalish lavachalta, you wouldn't have eaten anything. You had no rights at all in the first 3 years. Nahashta ka'achlet palgob hadoi, now you ate with me the first 3 years, now you should split with me after the 3 years. The similar question in the reverse, where, wait, why are you eating the first 3 years then? If I'm not getting anything after 3 years, you shouldn't get anything the first 3 years. So that the Gemara says, no, that's not difficult. Shem the Amalei is because the owner of the land could tell the owner of the tree, Iano Nati, had I planted not your tree, had I planted my own tree, Havakatini, it would have been small. I would have bought the small little olive sapling tree, and it wouldn't have created any shade. It would have been small. Vizaran Techasayu Silka Bayarkan, I would have planted beneath it, since it wouldn't have had shade blocking, I would have planted beets and vegetables. And the fact that I couldn't, because it was your tree actually, it did cause me some loss. So it makes sense that I should be sharing with you the profits of the fruits in the first 3 years. Yeah, I can't take it all for myself, because you're right, if I planted something, it would have been Arla. So a lot of it is from you, but some of it from me too, because I would have gotten some other benefit had I not put in your tree. So at least give me half of what you have. But again, after the 3 years where I get no benefit from you because I would have planted any tree, I would have had my own tree. Now, after 3 years, it all goes, according to this version, to Labala Karka. Related discussion, the Gemara says, Tanu, we learned in the Braisa, Amar Halah, if the owner of the olive tree tells to the owner of the land, Zaysiani Naitel, you know what, I'm taking back my olive tree. I know the river swept it down into your field. I'm taking back my olive tree. Says the Braisa, ain't Shemalai. We don't listen to him. Rather, actually, the olive tree has to stay over there in that person's land. Now, even though, so in the first 3 years, okay, it's not so bad for him, he gets to split the profits. Even though that after 3 years, actually, all of it, all the payers are going to go to the owner of the land, So that Taisa explains because, yes, the owner of the land has to compensate the owner of the tree, the value of that olive tree, how much it's worth to sell for planting purposes. Meaning he can't just go ahead and give him the value of olive wood, because here they're producing and they're ready to be made to produce fruits. So he has to compensate him, but he's not allowed to go ahead and take it back and bring it back into his field. Ask him about my time. What's the reason? Why can't he take it back? It's his olive tree. Because of the settlement of Eretz Yisrael, once it's already there in that other person's field and it's producing fruit, you're now allowed to go ahead and take it back to the original owner's field. Omer Bimer, he makes a comment regarding this statement of Rabbi Yechanan, like such a statement, tzricha rabba, needs such a great person. In other words, if not for Rabbi Yechanan having to explain that he's not allowed to take it back because of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, we wouldn't have said it ourselves based on logic. Now the Gemara continues, now in a related discussion, similar to another statement from Rabbi Yirmiyah on another statement of Rabbi Yechanan regarding saying, wow, kagayin dal tzricha rabba, you would need a great person like Rabbi Yechanan to say such a statement. So the Gemara says, Tznan hastam, we learned it within the Mishnah Masechtas Demai. Behuda Omer, he says, Hamakabel, someone receives, which is what's called Kablonis, which another name is Arisus, he takes a piece of land for as a lease for giving half of the profits of the produce to the owner that's leasing it to him. So if a person receives, he does this Kablonis, of a Sade Avesa Menanachri, it's really his father's fields, which are now have been taken possession by a non-Jew, and now he is leasing it, which is this arisus, to give half the profits to the non-Jewish owner, he's doing this kablonis from the non-Jew. So it says Rabbi Yehuda, so ma'aser, so first, he has to tithe all the produce, and then, venoisimly, then he gives to the non-Jew his portion of the profits of the field. So it comes out that he's taking ma'aser, tithe, the Jewish worker, not only on his own part of the produce that he's taking as a profit, but even on the non-Jewish portions. And that's obviously a loss for him, because why is he taking Meiser for the non-Jew's portion? That's the halacha they mentioned in Masechtas Demai. So says the Gemara, Sabrua, so those who wanted to explain this Mishnah thought that Meisa da Avesa, what does the Mishnah mean over there when it's talking about that he's leasing the field of his father that's owned by a non-Jew? It means Eretz Yisrael. It means any piece of land in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Vamai Karla Sade Avesim. So why is it called the field of his fathers? It means Sade Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, our forefathers, meaning the field of Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Moreover, Ksaba, they thought that to understand this halacha in the Mishnah over there, that in Kinyin Lanachri Be'eretz Yisrael Lafkiya Miyad Maisa, there is no acquisition for a non-Jew halachically in the land of Eretz Yisrael to remove the obligation of Meiser, because the non-Jew doesn't really own it halachically, so it is like regular Jewish produce that requires Meiser. Moreover, a third variable that they thought was that a Mekabel, if someone that leases the land for giving half the produce to the owner, that is Kecheicher Dami. It's as if, which really these are two different types of leases. Again, Kablonis is where you give a portion of the produce, of the profits of the produce to the owner as working as a sharecropper. Whereas Chaycher, Chachkirus, is more about that you pay him a certain amount of money, like a lease. Meaning you say, okay, whatever, however much it produces, doesn't make a difference. I'm going to pay you this amount of, let's say, money or a produce per year, not dependent on how much the profits of the produce are. So the assumption was that a mekabel is kecheicher, meaning machecher, just like someone that leases bein avud or bein loy avud, whether it produces or doesn't produce, that he has to give that amount to the owner, and hence bayi isuri umaiden lay. So if someone, let's say, has this lease, all of it of the produce of the land is his. If he wants to give him that produce as the amount that he owes for the lease to the owner, it's his prerogative. But that's not inherent in that produce, because he owes him whether he makes produce or not. So if he would want to, he would have to first take off Meister and give it to the owner, because the chipei rea chayvasadami, essentially it's just like using it to pay his debt, which he owes, irregardless of what it produces, but it's all his produce. So too, by someone, this was the assumption, when he works as a sharecropper, that when he's giving the amount that he owes to the owner, it's also like paying his debt. So he has to go out and take off ma'aser first, and then give it, in this case, to the non-Jewish owner, because the fact that a non-Jew has ownership doesn't remove the obligation of ma'aser of the produce of this field. That was the assumption. That asked Amalei Rav Kahana L'Rav Papi. Rav Kahana asked Rav Papi. Some say he asked it L'Rav Zvid. He said, I don't understand. Elohad the Tanya, but then this that we learn in the Braisa as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, and we just quoted that Mishnah was Rabbi Yehuda, HaMakabel Steh HaVaisav Mimetzik Nachiv. Someone does this Kablon, as he works as a sharecropper in his father's fields from a non-Jewish person that grabs away people's fields. So the halach is similar to that Mishnah. Ma'asav HaNaisen, he has to first take of Maisa and then give it to that person that robs other people's fields, who he's working for now as a sharecropper. It's the first take of mice and then give that portion to that non-Jewish meitzik. Now, that the question is, Esther of Kahana, my area meitzik, why would Rabbi Yehuda in this braisa mention specifically a meitzik, the way we had thought his interpretation of his halacha similarly was in Masechtas Demai, I feel like a meitzik nami. What I mean, even if he's not a person that robs other people's fields, that wasn't the concept of the halacha. The concept of halacha was that he has to take of meister because the non-Jewish ownership does not remove that obligation, and the makabel is like a chaycher, and just like a chaycher is like paying a debt, but it's all his produce, and he has to take of meister, so too over here. So why does it have any significance to the fact that it's a non-Jewish? It sounds like because he's a non-Jewish guy who steals from other people. So El Olam rather says the Gemara, there's a different interpretation of that Mishnah Masechtas Demai. Actually, yesh kinyan l'nachri b'eretz Yisrael. There is a halachic acquisition for a non-Jew in the land of Israel. Lafkia miyad meiser, to exclude from the obligation of separating meiser. So for that itself, he actually would not have to take off meiser because it's a non-Jewish land. Moreover, says the Gemara, and even if you want to say that there's no kinyan for a non-Jew to remove the obligation of meiser, but still, the other variable, actually, someone that works as a kabbalan, as a oris, is actually not like someone that has a lease. It's actually not incumbent upon them to exempt the portion that's owned by the non-Jew, because he's not paying up from his produce the debt that he owes to the non-Jewish owner. It actually grew in the domain of the non-Jewish owner. It was never his produce. He was only getting half the profits, half of it was the non-Jew, and that was always the non-Jews. And the non-Jews has nothing to do with him, even if it's chayva meiser, that's not his obligation. Now, umayis de'avosiv. So, what is the understanding of that Mishnah when it talks about that he's doing this arisis, this sharecropping from the non-Jew, which is really his father's fields? Doesn't mean Eretz Yisrael. It means de'avosiv mamash. It literally means to say it's his father's fields, which, yes, like it's explained by Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, that the non-Jew stole from his fathers, which happens many times to the Jews, where it's really their family's property, and then the non-Jew steal it. Now, the Jewish child is working for the non-Jew. Now, so what's the understanding of this halacha? So where's the obligation of him, especially if it's owned by a non-Jew, and it's an arisis, which is not his obligation, and the non-Jew's portion is exempt from meiser, so why is he taking meiser from the non-Jew's portion and then giving it to him? So that the Gemara explains, Ula d'dehu d'kansu rabbanu. The rabbis specifically penalize the child of the original owner of this field that was in the family, many who knows for how many generations, that he's working for the non-Jewish thief. He's the one that the rabbis penalized, that he has to give meiser of the non-Jew's portion before he gives it to him. Why? Because the Aidi de Chaviv Yaleo, since this land is very dear to him, this was his father worked here, and his grandfather worked here, his great-grandfather worked here, so he's not going to hold back from taking this sharecropping job of getting half the profits, because Tafi Va'azel, he will go ahead and he will add on and pay for the price of working this field more than other sharecroppers would be, which meaning that requires from him taking meiser not only of his own produce, but even the produce of the portion that's owned by the non-Jew. And Mekabala, and he'll accept such a kablanus of Arisas. Now, I will inish the Alma, but a regular person, if you can impose upon him not only to take meiser of his own produce, but even the part that's from owned by the non-Jew, then he won't accept such a sharecropping. So therefore, the rabbis didn't penalize him, and they only penalized it to the child of the original owners of the fields. Now, the Gemara wonders, but Ula d'day, my time comes to Rabbanan. But why him? Did the rabbis penalize him? What sin did he make that they're penalizing him, that he has to go ahead and give meiser of the portion that's owned by the non-Jew? So Amar Biechani explains, Kadesh Tehi Bara B'yadai, so that it should be Bara, which Rashi explains from the term of Brewer, like clarified and clear and strong in his possession, meaning so that he should go back and reacquire that field that was rightfully owned by his fathers and grandparents. Because it's going to be very difficult for him to separate tithe, which is an extra 10% of the portions, that's not even his profits, it's the non-Jew's profits. And therefore, he'll go through the effort and he'll add on money, he'll get money, he'll buy it back from the non-Jew. And therefore, we only did it and imposed it on the child because only he would go to that extent to get the family heirloom, to get this land, this legacy back, and therefore they did it to him. Now, Amr Birmiyah, he says, like Rabbi Yirmiyah says regarding this halacha, Rabbi Yochanan, he says, like such a halacha, you needed a great person like Rabbi Yochanan to say. And that's why the Gemara introduced this halacha to say the same concept, which is that we wanted people to take back the Eretz Yisrael. There's such a concept of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael that only the child will go through that effort. So we penalize him, which will then say, I can't do this anymore. I can't pay a tenth for his portion. Let me go ahead and buy it back. Now the Gemara continues with the discussion that we were mentioning before regarding the halacha of our Mishnah, regarding planting a tree in someone else's property. Seidmar, we learned, Hayarid Latich Stecha, a very similar discussion. Someone goes into his friend's field, and he plants trees without the guy's permission. He goes and plants a tree in that guy's field. So Amar Rav, Rav says, Shamanla, we evaluate for the guy who planted the tree how much was the value of the tree that he planted. The Yod al Tachtoin, he gets the lower hand. What that means to say is, if let's say the increase of the value of the tree in that guy's field is more than how much the expense was that this guy spent on planting the tree, he only gets the expense. And if actually the expense of planting the tree is more than the benefit that the guy has now for the what's in the field, so then he only gets that benefit. He gets the lower hand of with whichever is the shvach or the itzah. That's what Rav says. Or Shmuel Amar, he says that no. Actually, we evaluate how much would a person be willing to pay to plant trees in this field, which seems to be like the upper hand, a guy who would hire a guy to plant trees. And that's how much the guy gets, even though he did it without the permission of the guy who he planted in this field. Amar Papi says, it's actually not a machlokes. There's no dispute between Rav and Shmuel. Because Kan Besada Hasuya Lita. Shmuel is talking about in the case of where it's a type of field that usually trees are planted, where it's very beautiful and it makes the field better by planting trees there than to plant any other types of produce. So that's what Halacha Shmuel applies, that you pay him how much a guy would pay to have a guy plant trees in his field. Kan, besad she'en asui lita. Rav was talking about in the field, which usually you don't plant trees. It's not beneficial for him to plant trees. You plant it, okay, what can I do? I'm going to give you the lower of the two, whether they be the expenses or the benefit. Now the Gemara explains, moreover, v'had the Rav, that this halacha of Rav, that he only gets yada al tachtoina, the guy who plants it gets the lower hand, la b'fershid. He didn't say it explicitly as a halacha. El mechlolet, it was inferred from something Rav had once paskin. Because the Ahud Asla came to Rav, there was a certain individual that came in front of Rav. Amar lei, so Rav said to the guy whose field it was planted in, zil shumle, go and evaluate for the guy who planted it and compensate him for how much he spent planting a tree in your field. So Amalei, so the owner of the field said, Loi Bina, says, I don't want this tree that he planted. This was actually a field of grain that I planted. I don't need a tree here. Why should I compensate him? So Amalei, so Rav said, okay, Zil Shumle V'yod El Tachtayna, go evaluate it, but give him the lower hand. Either pay him only the expenses, and if actually the value of is lower than the expenses, then pay him just that. But you got to pay him something, but he gets the lower hand. So Amalei, Loi Bina, so the guy, the defendant, still said, I don't want it. Why am I didn't want to pay him expenses. I don't need this. Now, ultimately, Rav saw that actually, not only did he want it, this guy, he actually fenced around that tree, and he actually started protecting the tree. Amalei, so Rav said to him, oh, golas adaitech denichlach, you just revealed your intention. Did you actually do prefer it? And you actually made this into a field that would be normally planted as a tree. So then it actually moves, like Rav Papa had said, into Shmuel's domain. Zil shumle biyada al yoina. Now you have to go ahead and evaluate it, and you actually have to give him the upper hand, like other people that plant trees in that city, however much the custom is to pay a guy who plants trees, that's how much you gotta pay him. But again, Rav never said explicitly yada tachtoina when the guy doesn't want it or when it's not good for him, it was inferred from that incident. Another Gemara continues with a related discussion that we're talking about, Itmar. So we spoke about just before going into someone else's field and planting a tree. Similarly, it says if someone goes into the dilapidated building of his friend, the guy didn't take care of the building, it's a chorva, it's one big hole. Now he built it up without the guy's permission. Now, moreover, however, now the guy says, I was just practicing my skills. I want to take back my wood and my bricks. I'm going to put it back to how it was originally as a chorva. So there's a machlokes, Rav Nachman of Mashemel. He says, we listen to the guy because he didn't have to do it. Now he's taking back his stuff. Rav Sheshe Zama ain't Shemel. He says, no, we don't listen to him. He can't take it back. You already built the guy's building. You can't take back what you did. Now, Mesvei, so on that, the Gemara asks from a Braisa on Rav Nachman. Because here, this Braisa is talking about exactly the same type of a topic where a guy went and built up with his bricks and his wood, someone else's building. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he says that it's a machlekes. Bishamay said we listen to the guy, he can take his stuff back. Basil say he can't take his stuff back. So as the Gemara, Lame Rav Nachman, Dama Kib Bishamay, comes to Rav Nachman saying like Bishamay, which is not like the halacha, where he's passing like Basil. So Rav Nachman seemingly is on the wrong side of halacha. And that the Gemara says, no, who the Amar of Nachman says, ki hai tana, like the following tana, who actually says that there is no machlekes beishamim beishil on this, which is like Rav Shimon Lazar, and he says that everyone holds, like Rav Nachman, that we listen to him. The tana, like Linda Brysa. The first opinion says, shoymeloi, dib Rav Shimon Lazar. Rav Shimon Lazar says, no one disagrees, Rav Beishil agrees to that, and that there, but that is the halacha, like Rav Nachman, that we do listen to him and he can take his stuff back. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel, he says, Bishami Aymim Shem, like we said before, it's only Bishami that says that we listen to him, but Basil Aymim Shem, like Basil says, no, we don't listen to him, he can't take it back. So the Gemara says, so what was the conclusion? What is the halacha regarding if a guy built up someone else's dilapidated building and wants to take his stuff back? So Rabbi Yaakov, or Rabbi Yechon, as a Gittin Tamid Beis, it depends. Bibayis, if he went into someone's dilapidated building and he built it without permission, so there, Shem, like there, we list him, he could take his stuff back. Regarding the previous case that we spoke about, Besada, where someone went to someone else's field and he planted a tree without permission, and he said, I want to take my tree back, then ain't Shemalai, then we don't listen to him. So the Gemara says, Besada, my time, why is a field different than a building? Says the Gemara, Mishum Yishu Beretz Yisrael. As we mentioned this idea before, because of the settlement of Beretz Yisrael, you already planted a tree, you can't take it out and take it back. Ekidami, the those say a different reason, is Mishum Kachsha Da'ara, is because he already weakened the land by planting a tree in there where it already grabbed all the nourishment from the ground. You can't go ahead and now rip out the tree and say, I'm taking it back because it already weakened the guy's field. You got to now leave the tree over there. So the Gemara says, Mam Beinayu. So, my Beinayu, what would be the difference between these two different interpretations? Beinayu, Chutzlaut, the difference would be out of Eretz Yisrael. According to the pin that says, because you weakened the land, so you already made him lose the value of his money, and that would apply even out of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you wouldn't listen to him and he can't take his tree out. But according to the one, that is because of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, obviously if it's out of Eretz Yisrael, that a reason doesn't apply, and he would be allowed to take his tree back. Now the Gemara now continues with the first part of the parak we're speaking about, Hashayla Sapar, which was a continuation of the last mission in the previous parak, discussing the Dal Shayim, the four types of guardians. Now it moves on to another one of the guardian, which is that of a Seicher, that regarding someone who rents, in this case, rents a house. So that the Mishnah says as follows. Hamasker bayis lachaveir. Someone rents a house to his friend. So says the Mishnah, b'maysag shamim in the winter, einu yochel lahitziyot. He can't evict him. Now, which the Mishnah explains, that's from Nachag b'ad Pesach. That's from Sukkot up until Pesach, the winter months. He can't evict him. B'maysag shamim the summer months, so shleishim yom. So that's for a period of 30 days. And the Gemara will explain the Mishnah. What does this mean, and why would there be a difference between the summer and the winter? But in the winter, you can't. In the summer, you give him a time of 30 days. Ubekrachim. Now, in the cities, which are a place where there's, in the urban areas, which are full of marketplaces, where everyone goes and wants to live over there, in the cities, and it's very hard to find a rental over there. So on that, the Mishnah says, Echad yimayisacham ve'echad yimayisacham. There, it doesn't make a difference whether winter or summer. Shnei masachaydish, you got to give him a period of 12 months. Now, ubechanuyos, and in the stores, where in the stores there's a whole different algorithm, which in the sense of that the storekeeper has to extend credit to people that buy from him. And sometimes it delays a long time until they come and pay him. Now, if they're going to come and pay him, they only know one way. They come to the address where the store is to pay back the credit. If the guy's going to be evicted, yes, he's going to have to go somewhere else. They're not going to go where to go, and he's going to lose all the credit that people owe him, all that debit. So therefore, regarding stores, says the Mishnah, Echad Ayaris ve'echad Krachim, whether it's in the towns or whether it's in the cities, Shnei Masachaydish, there we always give 12 months before we evict him. Shemim Lilaimer, he says, Chanus Shal Nachtoimim, regarding a store of the bakers, meaning that's where they sell the loaves of bread, and Mishal Savoim, of the dyers, then Shal Eshanim, there you have to give a period of 3 years, as Gemara will explain, because there they extend the credit for very long periods of time, and therefore, you got to leave him time that people who owe him, he has a 3-year notice that they'll be able to pay up the debts while he's still there in that store. Now the Gemara asked, as we'll explain this halacha, the opening halacha of the Mishnah, which the assumption of the Gemara is, although the words were that if someone leases a house to his friend, be a meisag shamim, in the winter months, that then you can't remove him min hachag v'la Pesach, the assumption actually of the Gemara was that the words be meisag shamim actually meant limehag shamim, meaning to say that if he leased the house for the winter, that he told him, here, lease me your house that I needed for the winter months, So then you can't get rid of him. Whereas if he leased it for the summer months, then 30 days. So that the Gemara asks. Why is the winter any different? Where? Because if a guy rents his house for the winter, if a guy's renting a house for the winter, he means for the whole winter, so you can't evict him during the winter. He was renting it for the whole winter. So you may say, why is the summer any different? You're renting a bungalow, when a guy rents a house, if you're saying, I want to rent it for the summer, it's l'kuli yimei, he's renting it for the whole summer, because he said, just like you said, l'yimei. Ella rather says the Gemara, not like we assume that it was for the winter or for the summer. Ella b'mais hagshamim, rather in the winter. Hang the time, what's the reason? To l'shchiach beis l'maker, a person cannot find anywhere to rent during the winter and the cold, harsh winter months. In other words, as Rashi explains, actually the halacha of the Mishnah was not talking that he specified I want it for the winter or for the summer. A guy just rented a house in general. And that the Mishnah is teaching us, that when a guy rents a house in general without specifying the amount of time, so that rental is for a period of 30 days. Now, therefore, in the summer months, again, not li ma'isachama, but bi ma'isachama, in the summer months where you could find rentals, so if he wants to evict him, so he can evict him after 30 days, because then your lease is up. A regular lease, when you don't specify amount of time, it's for 30 days. Now, but in the winter months where you can't find another place to rent, so although that the lease was only for 30 days, that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that you can't get rid of him from Chag until Pesach through the winter, and you have to keep on renewing him every single month, like the first month, which was the general lease that he made, which was only for 30 days, you have to keep on renewing it because he has nowhere to go. You can't kick him out when he has nowhere else to go. That's the halacha of the Mishnah. So in the winter, you can't get rid of him. In the summer, you could. Well, that has to Gemara, but Amos Seifa. Look later on the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, but Bekrachim in the cities, Echad Yemaisa Chama, the Echad Yemaisa Chama, whether summer or winter, Shnei Masa Chedish, it's always for a period of 12 months. Well, that has to Gemara, the Ilu Malula Yemaisa Chiris. Now imagine if, let's say, that this rental of 12 months of the rental is concluded, Bemaisa Chamim, Mapikle. If it concludes in the winter, sounds like from the reading of the Mishnah, that then you would evict him because it's for a period of 12 months if you're renting in the city. Now, v'amai, but why? But you just said that you can't get rid of anyone when even if the lease is up, which is generally 30 days, as you explained previously, in the winter you can't. You have to keep on renewing it because there's nowhere to go. So why did we say that if, let's say, regards to the city, you always give 12 months, but if he originally started renting it in the middle of the winter and the 12 months are up in the winter, so how are you allowed to get rid of him then? Didn't you say that he has nowhere to go in the winter and you can't evict him? So rather, Amar Yehuda, he gives a different interpretation. He actually says the halacha of the Mishnah is lohidia katani. It's actually regarding notification. It's not regarding how long does he get to stay there. It's actually regarding how much notification you have to give him. And this is what the Mishnah was saying. As we said before, which is the same as Rabbi Huda is going with, if someone rents a house in general, then an unspecified amount of time. So that the Mishnah said, so you can't evict him any time in the winter months from Sukkot until Pesach, unless you gave him a 30-day notice from beforehand. Now, what's important to understand is that this that we say about 30 days beforehand, or as we say, 12 months beforehand, that the Mishnah is talking about, let's say by the cities, is talking about giving him a notice, which is as follows. The Mishnah said, Hamaskir Bayis L'Chaver, if someone rents a house to his friend, so if the rental concludes in the winter, the Mishnah said, you can't evict him. What's the reason? Because there's no houses to be found during the winter. And that is what the Mishnah is saying, unless if you had notified him in the summer, 30 days before, which is that's what we're saying, that if you don't have to extend that time more than that. In other words, if let's say on the 15th of El, which is 30 days before the Yom Tov of Sukkot, you have to notify him that you're going to want to evict him. Now, what we hear from that halacha is that if let's say his rental was concluded in the middle of the summer month, that yes, you can't evict him until 30 days after you gave him a notice, but you got to give him 30 days notice. But if you want to go ahead and get him rid of him at that date that the lease is up, you can't, because you have to give him a 30-day up front. So when the Mishnah says, is Why is that? Because in the winter you can't find anything. You have to give him a 30-day notice so that he could find a rental apartment. In the winter you can never find anything. So when is that 30 days? That 30 days is 30 days before Sukkot. So then he has those time before the winter month to find an apartment. Which the Mishnah says, but b'maisachama shleishim yayim. In the summer, you always only have to give 30 days, no matter when the lease is up, because in the summer you could always find apartments. Now that's what the Mishnah continues. It says that in the city you have to give him a notification, not as we had assumed before that it's the lease is for 12 months. No, you have to give him a notice of 12 months before you want to evict him, but if not, you can't, because there it's very hard to find an apartment in the city. So rather, you would have to actually keep on renewing him until you first give him a 12-month notice, and then you could evict him, even though it's already past the time of when the lease was up. Says the Gemara, Tanam Halachi, similar in the Braisa to the way it was explained by Rabbi Huda. When we said in the Mishnah that, let's say in the summer, that for a regular house it's 30 days, or if let's say in the city it's 12 months, that halacha was only mentioned regarding the notification, not for how long the lease is. A lease is 30 days. But how much notification you have to give. So in the winter, you can never do it in the winter. You got to give it 30 days before the winter, which is the 15th of El. In the summer that you can find apartments, it could be any 30 days notice. And in the city where it's very hard to find apartments, the notice has to be 12 months before. Now, continues the Braisa, another related halacha. Now, just like the Mishnah is telling us that the owner has to notify the renter, so too the renter has to notify the owner that he plans on leaving. As the Gemara explains, because the Amalek is the Seich, the masker, the owner could tell the renter, Ei de'asen, had you notified me, have a terachna, I would have put in the effort, I would have put in advertisements, I would have found a good tenant, a good renter, and you didn't tell me, you can't just leave on me, you got to give me a notification, just like I got to give you a notification. Now, Amr Rav Asi says, Im nichnes yim echad b'meisak shamim, if it even entered one day already into the winter, in the yochel leitziyai min hachagat ha-pesach. You cannot evict him anymore from Sukkot all the way till Pesach. Now that the Gemara asked, but Vanan Shleishim Yem Kama. We said in the explanation of the Halacha of the Mishnah, it's actually not only that if it went one day into the winter, actually you have to give him a notification 30 days before Sukkot, 30 days before the winter. So why are we saying one day into the winter? It's actually even 30 days before. If you didn't have the 30 days, then it's too late. You can't evict him all the way till after Pesach. So that's the Gemara says, yeah, Halacha Kama, this is what he was saying. If it entered one day into the winter month, meaning of that 30 days before Sukkot, which is already considered the time period that you have to give him notice of 30 days before, if you only gave him, let's say, a 29-day notice before Sukkot, that's already too late because you got to give him 30 days before Sukkot. Already you wouldn't be able to evict him from that whole time period until after Pesach, when it's the summer month, and then you can find an apartment. Now, Amr Rav Huna, he qualifies this halacha. He says, "V'imba." Now, if the homeowner comes l'rabbis b'demeah, so he can't evict him. But if he comes to increase the amount of the rent, so marba, he could increase the amount of the rent when the time of the lease is up, even though he didn't notify him. If he didn't notify him, we said you can't evict him, no matter when. There's different times how much you got to give him notice. You can't evict him. But if the lease is up, he could increase the rent. On that, asked the Gemara, Amr Rav Nachman, he says, wait a second. Hai linkitei b'chuvsei. In such a situation, it's like he's holding on to his testicles, that he should let go of his cloak. In other words, that's extortion. That's, what do you mean? If you can increase the rent, there's no greater eviction than that. What do you mean? How could you let him raise the rent? And it's like kicking him out. So the Gemara says, no. What Rav Huna was talking about was the yaker bati, where the price of rent went up major since the guy started renting. I'm sorry, your lease is 3 years over, and now the town, the apartment that you had for 700 is worth 1200 now, where it's obvious loss for the owner, then he's allowed to increase the rent. But you're right, just like that, if the price doesn't go up, for him to just raise the rent, he wouldn't be allowed to, because that would be the equivalent of eviction. Now the Gemara says, other exceptions to this law. Pshita, it's obvious. If nafale besa, if the landlord's apartment fell down, if he lost his apartment. So amalei, so he could tell to the renter of his other apartment, to his tenant, lo'yedifis minoi, you're not better than me. In other words, since your lease is up, I could evict you now. Because he could say, look, your whole claim was why I can't kick you out now is because I didn't give you notification. Now, however, the whole reason was because why do you need a notification? So you could find another apartment, which takes time to find. Now, I didn't know that my apartment was going to get smashed and fall down to notify you because I didn't know it's going to collapse. Now, I also have nowhere else to live right now because, as you know, you can't find an apartment I can't find. So therefore, it doesn't make sense that you should be better than me, that you should be in the apartment and I should be homeless. So therefore, he could evict him and go live in the apartment that he was renting out to someone else. Now, however, says the Gemara, if Zavnei, if let's say the landlord goes and sells the apartment to someone else, or a orte, or if let's say he bequeaths it to someone else, or yavi b'matana, or he gifts it to someone else, amalei. So then the renter, the tenant, could tell to the new owner, the guy who bought it from that guy, lo yadifis migavidas b'nei. You're no better than the guy who you bought it from. In other words, just like he couldn't kick me out, you're also not any stronger than him. You're just buying over his rights, and since he couldn't kick me out, you can't kick me out either. Now continues the Gemara, kalali libre. If let's say the landlord is marrying off his child and he needs a house for his son to use for his new marriage. So then says the Gemara Chazina, then we see, if it was possible to notify the tenant beforehand, he should have notified him and therefore he's not allowed to kick him out. If he couldn't have notified him beforehand, then he could tell him, look, you know better than me. My child needs a place to live and I didn't know either way, and yes, so it's about you not having a place to live. My child, neither, and you can't be better than my child, and therefore he's allowed to kick him out. Now the Gemara brings a related incident. There was a certain man that had bought a shipload of wine. Now, he didn't have anywhere to store the wine that he bought. He had so much wine. So he said to a certain woman, do you have a certain place for me to rent from you, warehouse space? She said, no, I have nothing to, I'm not renting anything to you. So what did he do? He went and he got engaged to her. Now that he's her fiance, he gave her the space to put all his wine there. Now, he didn't really want to marry her. He went home. He wrote her a get, a divorce document, and he sent it to her. So she went. Agra shukulai, she hired people that schlepped at carry. Minei ubei, from the wine itself, which was being stored in her warehouse, she used some of the wine to pay the porters. Afiksei v'oisei b'shvila, they took it out, and they put it into the streets. So Amar Rav Huna b'Reidei Rishua, he says, based on Pesukim, kasha asa ken ya'asa lai, like he did, should be done to him, which is gemula yesha b'reishai, what he did should fall on his own head. In other words, as the Gemara explains, loy mebaya chatzadu l'kamel agra, we don't have to tell you that what she did was she's allowed to, in the sense of, if let's say it was a courtyard that she doesn't usually rent out, then for sure, there was all one scam, it was a mekach tois. She only did it because she was engaged to him, that's how he got his wine in there. Now that he's divorcing her, the whole thing was a ploy, she's dumping the stuff out. I don't usually lease this out to people. But that's what he's saying, that even if let's say the courtyard that she usually does lease out, still she has the rights to say that, no, I don't want your stuff in here. Because Amalei, she could tell him, "Lakula ama nichli logur." Yeah, for everyone else, I prefer to lease it out. But ulachola nichli. But to you, I don't prefer to lease it out. Because the dumbest are like Arya Arba. You appear to me like a crouching lion, where you're a manipulator, malicious person. Where I didn't want to lease it to you. Then you get married to me, and then you take advantage of me, and then you divorce me. That was not the intention at all. And therefore, she's allowed to go ahead and kick his stuff out. Now the Mishnah said that if let's say the guy who was renting the place was a baker or a dyer, that they dye things, is shalisham, is a period of 3 years you have to notify him. So Tanu learned the Brice, the reason is when they shekif and meruba, because their credit is very large for long periods of time, and therefore they have to have notice at least 3 years so that they can get all their debts back from the people that they extended on credit. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on this theme of the previous Mishnah of Hamaske Bayis L'Chaver. If someone rents a house to his friend. So says the Mishnah, and this is a common question regarding whose obligations is it? Is the landlord obligation, the tenant obligation? So the Mishnah qualifies as follows. Hamaske Chayiv, the landlord is obligated, bedelis, to provide a door, benagar, to provide a bolt, which is that to lock the door, they would stick this bolt into the top of the threshold of the ground, ubiminal, and a lock. And any professional thing that requires a real craftsman, a professional worker, that has to be provided by the landlord. But something that does not require a professional, so then the tenant has to do it himself. Now the Mishnah says, Hazevel, the manure, the fertilizer that's in the courtyard, that shall balabais, that belongs to the landowner, meaning to the owner of the land, to the masker. The Gemara will explain this halacha. But the ein l'secher, because the renter only has ela hayitzim and atano umin a karayim bilvad. He only gets the rights to the ashes that come out of the ovens, which he can use that as fertilizer too. But the fertilizer from animals that relieve themselves on the land, that goes to the masker, not to the secher. So Tan Bon Winla Bryce that elaborates on the halacha of our Mishnah. Hamasker bais lechaver. If someone leases a house to his friend, so masker chayiv, so the landlord is obligated, lahamad loy d'losses, as we said, to provide for him doors, lefteich loy chaloynes, to open up windows for him, lechazik loy tikra, to support the roof, if let's say it worms ate up in the planks of the ceiling, lismach loy kaira, to support, if let's say one of the beams broke, that the landlord has to take care of that. Now b'seicha chayiv, however, the renter, the tenant himself, is obligated, las loy sulam, if he has to make a ladder, to make those steps, Las le maka, to make a fence around his porch. Las le marziv, to make gutters. And as Rashi explains, their roofs in the Talmudic times, they would plaster it where it would be slanty on the four sides so that the water, the rain could come off on the sides. And so they would put around these boards around the edge of the roof to distance the water from the wall that it doesn't ruin the wall when it drips down. Now, if one of the gutters come down, so then a regular person could go ahead and put it back up. So therefore, that's included, as our Mishnah said, if it's not a Maisa Uman, so the renter has to do it. Ulatich has gagin, to plaster his roof, doesn't take any major types of handyman skills. So therefore, the renter has to do it himself. Now, Boyim and Rav Sheshes, they ask from Rav Sheshes, mezuzah on me. Whose obligation is the mezuzah? So the Gemara says, mezuzah? Ram Shashir said, mezuzah chayves hadarhi, the obligation of to put up the mezuzah scroll is on the renter, meaning the one who lives over there. As the Gemara says in Masechtas Menachos, the Pasuk says in Shema that a mezuzah is beisecha. Now the word could be also read biosecha, you're coming in. In other words, for the person that comes in and out of that apartment, which is the one who lives there, he's the one that has the obligation of putting out the mezuzah. So obviously it's the tenant, not the landlord. Ella, rather, the question was, mokim mezuzah al mi. Whose obligation is it to provide the placing for the where you put the mezuzah? Meaning the wood, which is where the door slams onto, that's the side post, that also has the same term as called, it's also called a mezuzah. Now, if it's made out of brick, you have to carve in a space into the side, into the doorpost, to put the mezuzah in there. Who has to do that work to provide a space where to put a mezuzah? So that Amul Rav Sheshes says Tinisuas, they answered, what I mean, that's the halacha of our Mishnah. Davash ain't Maisa Uman, something which does not require a craftsman, Hasechar, I say, the tenant has to do it. And says Rav Sheshes, Hainam Elab Maisa Uman, who this also doesn't require a craftsman, because after it's possible, as we continue to talk of Kav Bezim and Aleph, Beguv Sudikanya, with a tube of a reed. In other words, you could hang that tube of the reed there, where you could carve out that space and put the mezuzah in there, and to carve into the brick, which, yeah, that might require a professional. Since you could do it in the easy way of a tube with a reed and put the mezuzah in there, therefore that's something that's not a Maisa Uman, and therefore the Seicher has to do it, the tenant has to do it himself.